You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're meeting three of the nine people seeking a seat on Wilmington City Council. These are staggered four-year terms. Three seats are open this year. Two of the members with expiring terms are seeking re-election. The third, Earl Sheridan, has chosen not to run again after serving for three terms. Interviews with three other city council candidates are posted at WHQR.org. The rest will be posted by Thursday evening if you're listening to the live Thursday edition. Kevin O'Grady is completing his second four-year term on the Wilmington City Council. He serves on the boards of WAVE and CFPUA, that's the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, and he chaired the City Attorney Search Committee this year. He has participated in the historic Wilmington Foundation and Residents of Old Wilmington, or ROW, and he established and volunteered as the coordinator of the AARP Tax Aid Program at the New Hanover County Library, assisting area residents. He spent his pre-retirement career as a commercial litigator for 21 years. Before that, he worked as a consultant, a government auditor, a soldier, and a Peace Corps volunteer in Malaysia. Kevin O'Grady, welcome to Coastline.
I'm happy to be back here. Good to see you again, Rachel.
Good to see you, too. When you think back to your days in the Peace Corps, I imagine that was very early on.
I was very young. I was 20 when I went.
20 years old. So what stays with you about that time?
Interesting. I'm still in contact with some of those people. It's the personal relationships I made. The internet is a wonderful thing. I'm actually can be in daily contact with the counterpart, the fellow I worked with who ran the cooperatives. And I was his assistant, basically, to help him with the economic end of that, of the agriculture. I didn't do the planting stuff. He was the agriculture graduate. I was a business major, economics major in college, and I went there and helped them set up accounting and marketing programs and credit programs.
So when you think about that idealistic 20-year-old, mm-hmm. that young man that you were, if you met him now and he was sitting across from you and looking at you, what would he think of you? What would he say about how he'd turned out?
I think he'd be pretty proud of me because I married my wife who had three children, and they became mine. We've been together 38 years, had a wonderful career, made the money we needed so that I could retire early, she could retire early. And I think he'd be very proud that I'm back in public service, that I'm doing it again, and this time here, and doing it as an elected official.
And we're going to get to a question from Jez in just a moment. But I want to point out, when you last ran for Wilmington City Council, that was 2013.
Yes.
You were the biggest vote getter.
Yep.
You got 5,210 votes.
Yes.
And you are also the biggest and most visible lightning rod on the City Council. Most of the questions that have come in for the Coastline Candidate Interviews are directed towards you, whether they're Kevin O'Grady specific or not, or whether they could be addressed to any of the other candidates. Why is that?
Well, I speak my mind, and it doesn't change depending on who I go to. I recently ran into somebody who recalled when I went and talked to the Americans for Prosperity 4 years ago. And he said, boy, they were gunning for you that night. And I said, yeah, but I told them exactly the same thing I told the people the night before. And he said, yeah, I really admired that in you. I mean, I have my opinions. I am pretty clear about them, I think. That's me. You know what you're going to get if you vote for me. And I think people appreciate that, and I think that's part of the reason. Because I know there are people who come up and say, I disagree with you on this, but I'm going to vote for you anyway. You know, they're not one-issue voters. One-issue voters are very difficult to deal with because they've got one issue.
Well, speaking of one issue, Jez writes, moved to Wilmington as part of the supporting cast for the film industry. When it left, I began renting a VRBO I purchased as an investment house. Jez asks, you have been working to try to shut down VRBOs. Now, first of all, you have done work with Residents of Old Wilmington. That's a neighborhood association that has taken a position that has evolved. It's, I think, is now a little bit more nuanced. But we've had other people asking about your position on short-term rentals. And Laura even asked if, since you have been part of Residents of Old Wilmington and you've talked about representing the interests of Roe on city council, doesn't that mean you should recuse yourself from this issue? Does that not give you an inordinate amount of power on the issue?
No, it really doesn't. I'm one vote. And our recusal rules are very clear. You have to have a financial interest. There is no financial interest here. That would be like saying, I used to be on the board of the Historic Wilmington Foundation. Well, if a preservation issue comes up, you'd say, I can't vote on that. Of course not. We sit in a legislative position on the council. We decide policy. We get to take in all of our experience in that. And yes, I was a board member. I was the president of Roe, and I'm still a member, although I don't go to the meetings anymore because I tend to be, as you say, the lightning rod if I go there. That's just one point of view.
So then unpack for us your views on short-term rentals in Wilmington.
First of all, people think I'm against them, and that is not the case. From the beginning, I have said they're appropriate for the commercial areas of town, and there's plenty of opportunity there.
You think they should not exist in the residential?
No, I think that that is a position people try to impose on me because it's a great straw man to knock down. The fact is, I have looked at how can we deal with this phenomenon, this national industry. Remember, it's a $1 billion industry in a city that has residential neighborhoods. And a lot of cities are struggling with this. And the essence of residential neighborhood is you have to have residents. Interestingly, this city dealt with that problem in the 90s when bed and breakfasts began to spread in the city. And the city's answer was, we are going to add a section to our home occupation ordinance. And what it allowed was for people to run bed and breakfasts, but where there were conditions. One was the rental had to be, and that's a quote, I brought it so I could read it correctly, shall be clearly incidental and subordinate to its use as a principal residence. In other words, you had to have a resident who lived there. And that's my feeling. If you're in a residential neighborhood, all the people around you invested probably the biggest investment in their life to live in a residential area. And now you're saying, I want to turn the one next to you into a hotel. That's a problem for me. So I have evolved a little bit, and I think some of the other members have evolved to essentially mimic or to replicate what we did with bed and breakfast, which is also very similar to what they did in Nashville, and it has worked successfully there, to have that residential requirement. Yeah, it has. They're very pleased with it. We've had Nashville staff down here, and they're happy with the way it's working, and they also said it's had a very positive effect on their affordable housing issue because the investors who come in will buy the affordable houses first. What we did with bed and breakfast, which I think will replicate well, is resident requirement, spatial separation, which we did at the bed and breakfast, limiting the number of the rooms, the amount of traffic that can be there, how many staff, and then strictly following it. It's worked at the B&Bs. The B&B owners are neighbors. I live across the street from the biggest one in the city, and he's a neighbor.
And we've certainly heard that's one approach that we know is in the works. The city council has not yet voted on policy. That's ahead. We've also heard that regulation in Asheville is really tough because you can still hop on VRBO or Airbnb and find short-term rentals without any of those.
That have not been caught. Yeah.
So how would you regulate something like that?
We've been approached by, interesting, the Internet has allowed this phenomenon to occur, and I think the Internet is going to tame it. We've had some vendors come to us with computer programs that electronically search all the online reservation services, and they can report to you who's advertising and where they're advertising, including their addresses. And in our discussions, have come up with something which turned out to be very helpful. We had indicated that every licensee would have a license number and would be required to have that in every advertisement. And the people who run the software say, oh, then you're going to be able to catch everybody because they're going to have a license number. If they're legal, and if they're not, they're not going to have a license number or they're going to have a fake one. And they seem confident that that will help us with enforcement. Now, we're talking mostly, now these are not the VRBOs, these are the Airbnb type. Now, VRBO is a different issue because now you don't have a resident. By definition, when it's rented, the resident's not there. That opens you to investors who don't live here. So my feeling is, and I heard the mayor a couple of days ago on this show, and was surprised that he was very close to the position that I have been arguing for. And my feeling is the solution as we evolve, as we get back to it, would be to pass it for the Airbnb-type rental where a resident is present and still hold off on the VRBO.
Not permitted yet.
I mean, it won't be part of the home occupation regulations yet. Then get that software going. Let our staff get used to it. Let them learn how they can use it, how they can use it to enforce properly, and then come back and say, okay, what are the terms, if any, we would allow somebody to basically rent their house and not be there?
And I want to acknowledge there are a lot of people with questions about this, and we could easily spend this entire interview on short-term rentals. We could spend the whole hour on short-term rentals and not get to Charlie Rivenbark. Yeah. So B writes, do you think Wilmington is large enough for the amount of development happening and being planned around here? Why are factors like traffic and road work not a priority and development is a priority? Can Wilmington hold such a population without traffic issues in the future?
Okay, first of all, there's two questions there. Can we build the roads we need? And the answer is we're trying to. There's now a couple of projects up on military cutoff. This past week sat with our transportation people. I said, I want to see the numbers on what's been proposed and whether that really improves the situation. And in that, we uncovered that some of those numbers needed to be reworked and the plans need to be looked at again. So we do, in fact, try to deal with keeping the infrastructure up with what's coming. Now, the other part of the question was, why are people interested in coming here? The fact is we've made a great city to live in. You know, my theme this year is, you know, keep Wilmington the place we love to live. You know, we love it, and people who come and visit here love it. They want to live here. We are a victim of our success. That's why these businesses are coming here. That's why businesses are coming. That's why shopping centers are coming, and that's why people want to move here.
So then how do you balance that?
Well, that's what my campaign theme is about. How do we keep the things we love but still accommodate these people? The comprehensive plan is a good step that way. But we on the council, the staff, and the building community still do not really understand how to use it. We're struggling with that right now. We're going to have to learn how to use that better so that we can get better mixed use, hopefully somewhat self-contained developments that will not overtax our roadways.
And speaking of mixed use, the River Place project, this is the
down on the river.
Right, mixed use that's mm-hmm. taking the place of the Water Street parking
yep.
deck. That recently went up in price significantly, and City Council voted to accept that and build it into the budget. How do we know? I mean, there hasn't been any work done. How do we know that this price isn't going to keep ballooning every couple of quarters?
Okay, well, first of all, the increase that came in was still within budget. We had budgeted much more money for it. The contract involved there is a fixed price contract. The builder's got to build it for that price. What happened was as they got to the end after some delays and with the pressure on builders around the country, the estimates went up. We always anticipated there would be some increase. Our total budget was less than the original contract. Even with the increase that we put in there, we're still within the original budget for the project. So we didn't need to ask any additional money from the taxpayers. We didn't need it. We're within budget.
Why so many delays?
Projects are complicated, and it's hard to get them, all the pieces. You're not just talking about, well, let's go down there and build. You're talking about the city has to arrange their financing. Our financing depends on the builder's financing. And then you got a contractor out there you got to get, and he's got to get subs. It takes a lot of pieces to come together.
And we really could spend the rest of the hour. Kevin O'Grady, thanks so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure, always.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. When we come back from this break, we'll meet Charlie Rivenbark. You can ask your own question by calling us during the live Thursday show at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.